For Radio Catskill, this is Rosie Starr. Welcome to Farm and Country, locally produced radio about rural life in the Catskills and the Delaware River Valley. On today's show, I share my visit to the Wayne County Agriculture Day that took place earlier this year in Honesdale, Pennsylvania. We'll hear from farm family owner Tim Jaggers and Wayne County Commissioner Brian Smith. They'll talk about the Robinson Family Century Farm that was given recognition and Wayne County Future Farm Agriculture Initiatives. All of that and Keith Hubbard's Star Talk report on today's Farm and Country after news headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Nora Rahm. A massive salvage operation is underway in Baltimore, where the Francis Scott Key Bridge collapsed into the Patapsco River. Divers have recovered the bodies of two men in a pickup truck in the water. Four construction workers are still missing and presumed dead. The collapse of the bridge and the closure of the Port of Baltimore means lost work for those who load and unload cargo. NPR's Laurel Wamsley reports.
When the container ship Dali struck the bridge, sending it crumpling into the Patapsco River, the economic impact was immediate.
Quite a few are out of work right now, yes.
That's Scott Cowan, president of the International Longshoremen's Association Local 333 in Baltimore. He says the labor-intensive jobs that employ a lot of people are the loading and unloading, and that's not happening.
That really cuts into the actual workload of the port for the day. There's still some auto processing going on. There's still some work happening at our coal facility, and there's still some work happening at the container terminal. But is it full capacity? Not even close.
Cowan and other experts expect the port to fully recover once it's reopened. Laurel Wamsley, NPR News.
A federal judge in New Jersey is blocking the state's unusual county line ballot system from being used in the June primary. From member station WNYC, Mike Hayes reports the legal challenge is playing out in the race to unseat Senator Bob Menendez.
Democrat Andy Kim brought the suit against the county line system, in which candidates backed by political parties are grouped together in a single row or line. Researchers say voters usually just tick off all the boxes in that line, in some cases giving candidates a double-digit advantage. Kim and other critics say that's unconstitutional and lets New Jersey's political elites protect their interests while shutting reformers out. Now that a U.S. district judge has granted Kim's request for a preliminary injunction, clerks throughout New Jersey will have to scramble to redesign their ballots before June. Kim calls it a victory for a fairer, more democratic politics. For NPR News, I'm Mike Hayes in New Jersey.
The United Nations peacekeeping mission in Lebanon says four of its observers have been wounded by an explosion near the Israeli border. The BBC's Yolanda Nell reports that Israel is denying that it is behind the attack.
In recent days, tensions have again picked up along the unofficial border between Israel and Lebanon. There have been heavy exchanges of fire between Israeli forces and Lebanese armed groups, with casualties on both sides. The UN peacekeeping mission UNIFIL says that three of its observers, accompanied by a local translator, were wounded by a shell which exploded near them. They'd been on a foot patrol along the Blue Line, which divides southern Lebanon from Israel. UNIFIL said they were now receiving medical treatment and that it was still investigating the origin of the blast.
The BBC's Yolanda Nell reporting. You're listening to NPR News from Washington.
Welcome back to Farm and Country. I'm your host, Rosie Starr. On today's show, I share my visit to the Wayne County Agriculture Day that took place earlier this year in Honesdale, Pennsylvania. We'll hear from family farm owner Tim Jaggers and Wayne County Commissioner Brian Smith. They'll talk about the Robinson Family Century Farm that was given recognition and some Wayne County Future Farm Agriculture Initiatives. But first, here is Keith Hubbard with this week's Star Talk report. Thank you for joining us on Radio Catskill for this week's locally produced Farm and Country.
Farm and Country. I'm Keith Hubbard, and this is Star Talk. The possibility of finding life on Mars has intrigued scientists for almost 150 years. When the Italian astronomer Giovanni Schiaparelli described the presence of long, thin lines on Mars in the late 1800s, the American astronomer Percival Lowell attributed these lines as canals created by intelligent beings. To Lowell, these canals running north and south were the work of intelligent beings. Lowell's canals turned out to be the product of unclear images and self-delusion. NASA's Viking mission to Mars in 1976 sent two landers to Mars and contained an experiment to detect microbial life in Martian soil. The labeled release experiment introduced nutrients into the Martian soil to see if nutrients were consumed. Evidence for consumption would be in the form of gases that the landers would detect. The experiment was repeated after heating the soil to a degree that would kill off all known life. If the first experiment found evidence of metabolism and the second did not, it suggests that the metabolism process was biological in origin and not chemical. The experiments produced four positive results, indicating that the metabolism process was indeed of biological origin. However, other experiments failed to find corroborating evidence for life on Mars, and the results were deemed as a false positive. Since the Viking mission, no lander has included instruments to follow up on that experiment. Current and future landers have experiments to look for past signs of life, but not current signs of life. For Farm and Country and Star Talk, this has been Keith Hubbard, reminding you to keep looking up.
Here is Tim Jaggers from Robinson Family Century Farm in Wayne County, Pennsylvania, speaking to us from the recent Wayne County Agriculture Day in Honesdale, Pennsylvania.
Congratulations. Today's a special honor, so I'm going to let you introduce yourself and tell us why you got the award, and we'll talk about your family.
Okay. So my name is Tim Jaggers. My family was awarded from the Pennsylvania Department of Agriculture with a century farm. Our farm has been in our family since 1918. And we are the third owner of it, fourth generation, but third owner of it, me and my older sister. We own it together. Our family farm is called Robinson Family Farm. You can find us at some of the local farmers markets selling produce and product from our farm. My older sister, Tammy Newman, and her husband, Bob, are part owners with me and my wife, Lisa. Then I have some sisters, Kelly Jones and her husband, Ed. Their son, my nephew, Zach Jones, helps out a lot. And then my sister, Kathy Sedorovich, and her husband, Lenny, are also a part of it. And my mom and dad still live on the farm also, Merle and Audrey Jaggers. It was my mother's family's farm, the Robinson, so that's where the Robinson name came from. My great-grandfather, Charles Robinson, started it. My grandfather, Daniel Robinson, ran it. And now it's our turn for a while.
Well, you must feel so much pride today.
Yeah, I'm sure my grandfather would have loved it. One thing he was proud of was his farm. He liked his farm. He loved to take care of the land. The woodlands part of it as well. You know, they were in a large lumber business and thousands of acres right there. And, I'm sure he'd be proud.
What is the exact title of the award that you got?
It's called a Century Farm. So there will be a sign that we'll put out by the road at the end of the lane that will depict that we are a century farm. Our next milestone, if you will say, will be when it's 150 years old. I don't know as I'll see that, but hopefully my nephew does. And then his children or grandchildren, hopefully we'll see when it becomes a bicentennial farm of 200 years.
Well, I have been on your farm as part of a farm tour with children. We were in the potato field, and I remember some of the history that you shared during that time. Can you recap the last 100 years, what it's been like? What type of farming has gone on for the last 100 years?
Oh, sure. It's kind of funny because it's almost come right back around in a circle, if we will say. My great-grandfather, as I mentioned, the lumber, cut a lot of props and something called sprags for the coal mines. So in the early teens of 19th century, he would haul them over to the coal mines, over the mountain into Carbondale, and then he would bring back a load of coal. never made a trip empty, one way or the other. We're always loaded, and that's how he was able to keep going through the Great Depression. Had 12 children. All those worked on the farm at one point or another. As they grew up, some of them moved off the farm and left. A few of the sons also got 100 or 200 acre farms that neighbored our farm. My one great uncle, Virgil Robinson, he partnered with my grandfather, Daniel, and together the 300 acres, they went into the commercial dairy business.
And you mentioned your grandfather brought something to the coal mines, Sprags or Sprags?
Sprags, yes.
Can you explain what?
Yes, I'm sure there's a lot of people that do not know what a sprag is. They may have heard an expression over time in their life. When something didn't go right, someone may say, well, that threw a sprag in my wheel. And how that saying came about was a sprag was a piece of hardwood they would cut. You know, of course, that was all with the handsaws. They were approximately almost 2 feet long and maybe 3 inches in diameter. And behind our barn, when I was a young boy, there was a machine there. That was the sprag mill. And it was a machine that would sharpen the points on that piece of wood. So that piece of wood was like a big pencil sharpener. It would sharpen both ends of it. So they were a piece of wood, 3 inches in diameter, tapered down to a point on each end. Well, when the cars came out of the coal mines, they did not have brakes on them. So they would roll out by gravity full of coal. And there'd be a person there who would have an armful of these sprags and would actually throw them in between the spokes of the wheels on the car. And that's what would go up and catch. And that would lock that wheel up. And that's what stopped that load of coal coming out of the mines were sprags. That would be a consumable product. They would break, you know, they would. So there was always a market for sprags back way before my time. But to stop the coal cars as it came out of the mine. I'm lucky enough to have one at my house that was made from my family, left laying around, and so we've saved that, and I do have a sprag at home. Now, my great-grandfather before that raised beef cattle and also butchered them himself and sold the meat over in Carbondale. And, of course, when you took a load of meat to Carbondale, you came back with a load of coal. And then they went into dairy, and that lasted for quite a while. Around 1970, things went into the bulk milk, so they stopped shipping in cans. I remember cans when I was little, and they went to a big bulk tank. And then they did that, and I worked with them and for them till the health of my great-uncle got pretty bad. And in 1983, they sold the dairy herd. Raised some heifers for a while, leased the farm out. My grandfather passed away in 2003. And in the spring of 2004, me and my sisters purchased the farm. First thing we had to do, as I had been leasing it myself for some hay for our horses, but then decided I better do something else, more hay. So we went back into beef. And today we still have a herd of about 40 beef cows. Transitioned into some vegetables because to be diversified, I believe in being diversified. And the old saying, not to keep all your eggs in one basket, holds true in agriculture. So we do a lot of different produce that we sell at farmers markets, along with our beef. And then to be more diversified this past year, we started going into, we'll say, broiler chickens. So we raise meat chickens, which we process ourselves. And then also, last couple of years, I've been doing fresh turkeys for Thanksgiving. So we take pre-orders and raise that many turkeys and have them ready the week of Thanksgiving. So we've gone around to, from selling meat through the dairy, back to vegetables, and back to meat again.
After 100 years, that's a lot of experience. I know you haven't been doing it for 100 years, but the farm is still very much productive. What advice do you have for anyone that wants to begin farming now?
My advice would be to go ahead and do it. There's going to be some people that say you can't do it. It's tough. It's tough getting started, especially for young people. But if you can find someone who has a farm, who's willing to take someone in to help them get started, there's plenty of opportunity that way. We have a motto or a logo for our farm, Robinson Family Farm. And on our logo, it says we have a century of quality in our roots. And since we grow vegetables, that's kind of how we got tied that together with the century and the quality of it. And that is true. If you can get some young people interested, that is great. You'll hear a lot of people say, well, you can't make a living farming anymore. Well, a lot of them were still stuck in the dairy age. You know, there was a lot of dairy farms in our county at one time. It was like in the 60s, over 1,000. Now we're down to less than 30. But society has changed. So you have to change with it and adapt. If society's not going to be drinking milk, do something that they are going to be needing. Because every single person on the planet, hopefully, eat once a day. Now, some of us eat more, are lucky enough to. Some can't, but at least hopefully once a day they get to eat. And that's where we say we're feeding America one bite at a time.
That's a special sound bite. That's beautiful. The Farm Bill has not been signed just yet. Do you have any thoughts about the 2023 going into 2024 Farm Bill?
A lot of people at a smaller level, we don't think it really affects us much. But I can tell you it does. Globally, when you're talking about prices, that does trickle down to the littlest guy who sells to a couple of neighbors. So prices of fuel, prices of fertilizers, price of all our inputs are the same for the big guy as they are for the little guy. We've got to kind of be mindful of that. The Farm Bill does have to have in a certain amount of for the nutrition part of it. I know that always is a big sticking part of getting a Farm Bill passed every year or every time they do one. And you have to remember that even though we're in agriculture, a big part of agriculture are the consumers. If we don't have consumers, we don't have a job. Protecting that in the Farm Bill and having provisions for that to help out those who need some help, to be sure that, like I said, everybody can at least eat once a day, is very important. And I'm sure there's always some battle with the Farm Bill. In Washington, there's always going to be some battle. But I can assure you in the end, there's going to be a Farm Bill. It'll get passed, and it'll be okay in the end. We just have to wait for it.
Okay, so you're attached to this organization, the Farm Bureau. What does it do?
Okay, so the Farm Bureau, that is a good question. Some people say, what does the Farm Bureau do for me? Anybody who eats food should be a member of the Farm Bureau, really, to help support not only the farms, but our rural way of life. So one big thing is, if you don't have time to go to Harrisburg and talk to the legislators, your voice being a grassroots organization, your voice can be heard because you can bring an idea to a meeting at the county level. Policy can be set, voted upon. If it makes it through the county, it goes to the state, goes on to our state legislators to pick it up. It may be a policy, it goes on to the federal legislators. And it could go to Washington and be decided. So your voice really can be heard, even though you don't have time to take off from your everyday busy life to go talk to legislators to do that. The Farm Bureau will do that for you. That's what we have people to do. And that is the biggest thing of that is to that and to promote education, to connect our consumers with our farmers. There's a lot of disconnect on that. I was just talking, that's a short story, to the head of the food pantry here in our own county. We're talking about, as I go to the farm markets, I, as much a person telling people how to cook their food as I am the producer just making it. They're always asking, well, what is this? And I need to tell them, and, well, I never saw it like that, because they're used to seeing it either come in a box, frozen, or in a can. So you're always telling them how what it looks like in the raw form. Well, this person got some food from the food pantry. She said, well, it doesn't have a pull tab. How do I open it? That's how far disconnected we might be getting from our food supply. And so we have a lot of work to do, a lot of education to do on our people growing up, where that food comes from, what it looks like in a raw form, and what it can look like as it's cooked.
Do you have a presence, the Robinson Family Farm, in farm markets in Wayne County? And where are they?
Oh, yeah. We every Saturday, starting in May until October, we go to the Newfoundland Farmers Market in Newfoundland, Pennsylvania. Also in the Greentown area, it's called. So Newfoundland, Greentown, right on Route 191 in the Carlton Drake Memorial Park across from the elementary school. And then we also sell at our farm, either by appointment or if we happen to have something in a stand to come help yourself with. We try to do that as well. And then I do what we'll call some pop-up markets. In the summertime when we have an abundance of produce, we will go to some senior centers. They can't get out to get to the farmer's market, so we take the farmer's market to them and set that up through a lot through Pike County with that.
Are you familiar with Pennsylvania Preferred?
Yes, so we are a member of the Pennsylvania Preferred. We get labels and stickers for that to try to promote that. So it's a branding saying that this came from Pennsylvania. You know, we'd be proud of it. So yes, we do have that, and we are proud that what we have, everything comes from Pennsylvania. Not only that, but it comes from South Canaan Township, right in Wayne County.
Does the Farm Bureau get involved with the Farm Bill? Are they lobbyists or influencers?
Yes, very much. At the federal level, of course, the American Farm Bureau Federation is very instrumental in talking with our Secretary of Agriculture and with our legislators to have an input from a farmer's point of view. As I said, it has to have a little of everything, give and take from every side. So we have some from nutrition that may don't produce it, but they know the value of it. When you start talking about, like, over there, the hospital, Wayne Memorial, they do a great program where they were teaching people how to use some of our fresh produce from Wayne County. And had it on a radio show, like a podcast, and the health benefits of it. Yes, to go back to your question, the Farm Bureau does play an important role lobbying for the farmer side of things on that with the Farm Bill.
Is there anything else you'd like to share?
I would say, you asked this question earlier, what I would tell young people to follow your dreams. If you really have a passion for that, it'll happen. And continue on, and it will happen. You know, you'll have some ups and downs, I'm sure. We all do. But in time, it'll all work out for you.
Who do you see inheriting now the Robinson family farm?
Oh, boy, I don't know. That is a toss-up. I'm not sure how it's going to go. I don't have any children, so it's going to have to go to one of my nieces or nephews. In a case like my grandfather to me and my sister, it kind of skipped over a generation, so it may go to a child of one of my nieces or nephews, is the best guess.
I hope you're glowing with this honor.
Thank you. Yes, it's quite an honor.
And you got a great tie, tomatoes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right.
That was Tim Jaggers from the Robinson Family Century Farm in Wayne County, Pennsylvania.
I'm Commissioner Brian Smith from Wayne County.
We're at Wayne Agricultural Day, and you just recognized with an honor one of the most prominent families in Wayne County farm history.
Tim Jaggers and his sister Tammy are here with the Robinson Family Farm, and they've been in place actually for, I think, a little over 200 years now. So it's a, a multi-generational farm, and it's something that I think we need to see more of. And I love to appreciate farms like that because it shows that there's a history of farms and farm families and next generations taking over. The one thing that we see a trend in this country, and I've seen it for quite some time now, is the fact that farmers have been going out of business. That's a very dangerous trend when we see now that we actually have a shortage of beef in this country. And I should add that some people don't really recognize the fact that the dairy industry was a feeder for the beef industry. So the useful life of a dairy cow pretty much terminated after 4 or 5 years, and cows went for beef. Growing beef is something that's critically important to this country. Important for us to watch next generation kids, and that's why we've gotten education for ag curriculums back in our school. That's why we put FFA back in the school. You know, we're working with our school districts to educate kids on the math, the technologies, the science, and how they put those in place on the farm. And these kids are extremely enthusiastic about getting back on the farm and through the proper sciences, doing a good job producing food. And that's not just beef or dairy or poultry. That's fruits and vegetables and everything you can plant. High tunnels are becoming part of the technology now that we can use here in the Northeast and really put into place some innovation. Russell Redding, Secretary of Pennsylvania, has even said that the things that we're doing here in Wayne County could be a model for the rest of the state and a model for this nation. Everybody should be working on retaining farmers, getting young kids back into enthusiastic situations where they want to go back in the farm. showing them profitable ways on the farm, showing them things that they can do on the farm to be successful, to achieve the American dream. There's no better place to do that than on the farm, and I'm extremely enthusiastic about the things we're doing here in Wayne County. It started with Wayne Tomorrow. The one thing that we saw was we needed to bring people together to make agriculture strengthened, make this a common ground goal. We can work together. Not everybody has to agree. In an office, you can have a disagreement with somebody and walk away and still be friends. You know, we don't always have to hate one another because of our opinions. So I think agriculture gives us all of that. And not only is it something that gives us unity, it gives us something that we need critically, and that's our food. My vision is to be able to see people again back on farms, profitable, keeping our agricultural lands. You know, there's a great effort to keep open space. Well, open space, I believe, is important, but I believe that open space is something that can be achieved through agricultural lands. Have it actively engaged in agriculture. And if you see that happen locally and you see that happen across the state, we could see that happen across our great nation. Another good example is just to be able to see fluid milk make a return. We have a lot of people coming into this country across our border in Mexico, and there's a lot of challenges that go along with that. But there's also some opportunities when we talk about these people need to be fed. We have farmers in this country who could go into business, make some more food, and be more profitable by feeding these people. We've actually done a study in Wayne County about soft cheeses. These are soft cheeses that the Hispanic-speaking population are enthusiastic, they crave, they want, they eat it at their home place. It's an opportunity, especially in Pennsylvania, to be able to locate a cheese plant, maybe centrally located in the state, and bring milk in from all over the state. It's only 3.5 hours any corner of the state from the center of the state, and actually have another spot where commodity could be produced and sold at a profit. The feasibility study that we did showed that this could be produced and sold at a profit, and the profit could be returned back to the farmer and keep farmers in place and actually allow that next generation to go back on those, some of those farms that went out of business and start back into business again. The next thing we're going to try to do through Wayne Tomorrow in the Ag Committee is put into place an Ag Innovation Center where we can help these young people, help people who are already engaged in agriculture, be more innovative, be more successful, put a marketplace in place where it brings people in closer in touch with the farmer who's actually producing the food. So that's a full cycle kind of understanding and appreciation that needs to be in place also. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Wayne County Commissioner Brian Smith. He was speaking to us from the recent Wayne County Agriculture Day in Honesdale, Pennsylvania. We hope that you enjoyed our show this week with production by Radio Catskill volunteers Keith Hubbard and myself, Rosie Starr. Special thanks goes to our guests, Tim Jaggers from Robinson Family Century Farm in Wayne County, Pennsylvania, and Wayne County Commissioner Brian Smith. Thanks for listening local to Farm and Country and supporting Radio Catskill, public radio for the Catskills and Northeast Pennsylvania. Listen on air at 90.5 FM on your phone or smart speaker and online at wjffradio.org. Support for Farm and Country comes from Damascus Citizens for Sustainability, a community-supported, science-based nonprofit, taking legal actions, providing tools for action, and raising awareness of fracking damage since 2008, proactively protecting public health in the Delaware River Basin and beyond. DamascusCitizens.org.
The fight against disinformation is more complicated than ever. And in a record year for elections around the world, it's never been more important. I'm Miles Parks. I cover voting and election security for NPR. At NPR and this station, we report rigorously on the forces trying to disrupt democracy and provide your community with reliable information. This election year, stand with the facts. Donate to this station today.
Give now at wjffradio.org.
On this week's Wait, Wait, Malala Yousafzai explained what she did